From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo and the legislature face a structural deficit of more than $4 billion. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on Governor Cuomo saying the GOP tax cut plan is a political attack on New York and other blue states. And the state controller heads to Dutchess County to promote a new savings plan for individuals with disabilities. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. One of the biggest challenges that Governor Andrew Cuomo and state lawmakers will face in 2018 is balancing the state's budget, which already has a structural deficit of more than $4 billion. As the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, on top of that, federal changes to taxes and health care could cost the state billions more in lost funding.
State revenues are down, contributing to the largest structural budget gap in 7 years. The state controller, Tom DiNapoli, estimates the deficit to be around $4.4 billion. The ranking Democrat on the Senate Finance Committee, Senator Liz Krueger, says that news alone would be bad enough.
That disturbs me, but that's not what keeps me up at night. What Washington might do to us is what keeps me up at night.
Krueger says the tax overhaul plan now being negotiated by the Republican-led House and Senate is an endless list of policy changes that will cost New York, including the ripple effect of ending deductions for state and local taxes.
The loss of money to taxpayers in New York State through federal actions will absolutely have enormous ramifications in the billions and billions on total revenue and what happens to it at the state level.
Governor Cuomo, who calls the federal tax proposal devastating for New York, says some tough decisions will need to be made.
There's no doubt that the state will have a deficit, and the budget is not going to be an easy budget, and we're going to have to find additional savings in the budget. That's clear.
Senator Krueger says Democrats in the state Senate are considering pushing once again for starting a new reserve fund to handle major policy shifts in Washington that could derail the state budget. She says the existing rainy day fund of around $2 billion is just not enough.
The Senate Democrats recommended that we actually supplement that with a Trump emergency fund. I think we were calling for $3 billion last year.
She says some of the money could come from cutting the estimated $8 billion spent each year on economic development programs. Despite the looming fiscal crisis, sectors that depend on the state for money are already making the case for why they need more aid in 2018. The Educational Conference Board, a coalition of school boards, teachers' unions, and school administrators, say the state's schools need an additional $1.5 billion more dollars next year just to keep up with rising costs like health insurance premiums and pensions. Brian Fessler with the New York State School Board says with the state property tax cap set at 2% or lower, depending on the rate of inflation, schools don't have many ways of raising extra funds.
We certainly recognize the situation that we're in, but our students are still in school now. They'll be here throughout this year in good times and in bad for state budget seasons. And so this is what we see as important and critical for the education for our students going forward.
The groups are also asking for an additional $500 million for some targeted needs, including more resources to help the growing number of children who need to learn English at school. Cuomo, speaking to reporters in Syracuse a few days before the school districts asked for the money, says it's going to be difficult next year to fulfill all the requests for more funds.
Every school will say we spend more money. Every local government will say we need more money. Every family, frankly, will say we need more money. my kids will say they need more money. And by the way, I need more money. So, where that's a sort of universal statement. The problem is there is no more money.
Cuomo says the state during his tenure has already spent a record amount on schools, with over $25 billion in state funds going to schools in the current fiscal year. He says New York is the top spender per pupil of any state in the nation. The governor has just over a month before he presents his budget plan. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week we hear from our Karen DeWitt. Of course, anyone who's observing New York politics knows there's a major impact coming if the GOP tax plan goes through. The biggest challenge for Governor Cuomo and state lawmakers, as DeWitt reports this week, is the balancing of the state budget, which already has a structural deficit of more than $4 billion. On top of all that, the governor saying quite specifically, referencing a past headline, that the president is essentially saying to New York, drop dead.
Well, I think that's true. I think this president is at war with the blue states. It shows his punitive side. You didn't vote for me. You're in the doghouse. I don't care what happens to you if you can't deduct state and local taxes. Now, I did see that Mitch McConnell, in terms of the reconciliation, at least as we sit here today, and it may be early, in terms of the reconciliation, wants to have a more generous deduction of state and local taxes, because he knows that there's going to be a certain amount of hell to pay, as New Yorkers realize, and Californians and Massachusettsians realize that they have to pay more, not less, under this thing. Look, David, this tax plan is extraordinarily unpopular. You know, this is supposed to be the signature achievement of the Trump administration. We've got this under our belt. We can run on it. Not so fast. The fact is, people don't like it. The numbers are showing approval for this tax package in the 20s. In the 20s. That means most of this country is seriously against it. Now, you have gerrymandered districts, you have a House of Representatives that wants to pay off to its donors, the Republicans in the House, and, you know, this is going to happen. But it's rough around the edges, and we'll have to see what the conference committee between the Senate and the House do. And by the way, let me say that the governor is absolutely right on this this thing. His job is to get out there and to say New York is getting screwed, and we have to do something about that. He's got a lot of problems. He's got political trials coming up of some of his best friends. But on this one, he's certainly right.
He went on to NPR, Alan, to talk about this issue. And some are capitalizing on a statement in agreement about New York being a high tax state, which the governor said yes, and then said, but we've managed to lower taxes in New York.
Well, you know, you've got to say that. But the fact is, New York is a high tax state, and an awful lot of New Yorkers get out because they are extraordinarily worried about having to pay taxes. They go to Florida for just the number of days they have to so that they're not declared a citizen of New York. And this only threatens to get worse, not better.
Is it possible, as you referenced, many of these issues that the governor's going to have to face, and he said he's going to run for re-election, that there's anybody that can challenge him?
No. Right now, we're not seeing anybody who is going to challenge this governor. He's got $26, $27 million, at least, in the kitty to run with. You won't be able to turn the television on without seeing his face, you know, hectoring you and people talking about everything that he has achieved. So that's going to be propaganda 101. David, you say he's going to run for governor. I'm pretty sure he's going to run for president. You know, anybody who says he can't win is just wrong. I can prove that to you. Who's the president of the United States right now?
He's got a nemesis in fellow Democrat, though, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
He does. I think de Blasio, there have been printed reports that de Blasio is throwing caution to the wind and is going to say, the heck with it. I'm going to go for this guy's political throat. And that's tough because, you know, you're mayor of New York. You need the governor because the city, as we know in our political science, is a creature of the state. And so if the governor decides, well, you know, he's going to take away your pre-K, which is the signature issue that de Blasio is so proud of, or if he does any of that. But if he does that, he's going to lose a lot of votes. So these guys are basically doing jujitsu on each other, and in the end, both are going to lose.
Alan, the House passed H.R. 38, the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act, which permits residents of states with a right to constitutional concealed carry to travel to other states. Lee Stefanik, the Republican in the North Country, voted for the act. Governor Cuomo says it will make New Yorkers less safe.
Well, the governor is certainly right on this, as he has been right all along on the gun issue. Congresswoman Stefanik has not shown herself to be what we would call a courageous individual. You know, guns are very popular in the North Country. And, you know, if the NRA says it's good, well, there are certain predictable political characters you can see going along with it all over the place. We used to have something in New York, I'm sure we still have it, called the Sullivan Law. You were caught with a concealed firearm, you were in real trouble. So here it is, folks. We have the disgrace, the national, worldly, every other kind of disgrace that we could have had with Sandy Hook and those poor children being wiped out and all of these other shooting incidents, and we go ahead and we make it worse. I would like to disassociate myself from everybody else, because when I use the word we, I mean as a country. There are many people who just think that this is the road to hell.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli was in Dutchess County this week getting the word out about a new savings plan for individuals with disabilities. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
DiNapoli talked about the savings plan called New York Achieving a Better Life Experience, or ABLE, with area residents and nonprofit and government employees. The audience was assembled at the Ark of Dutchess in Poughkeepsie, a nonprofit organization providing support to children and adults with developmental disabilities and their families.
New York ABLE helps families and individuals with disabilities set aside money to save for medical and other expenses, and this is what's key, without the risk of losing the federal benefits that they count on.
Benefits such as Supplemental Security Income and Medicaid.
We wanted people to know the basics of the program and, more importantly, how to access more detailed information tailored to their own situation, because ultimately it's a very personal choice. No one's required to go into the program, but we make it easy. For as little as $25, you can open up an account. So we really just hope it will help more New Yorkers have a more secure financial future.
New York ABLE accounts are also known as 529A accounts, modeled after the 529 College Savings Program. Contributions are not tax deductible, and the annual contribution is capped at $14,000. The maximum account balance is $100,000, and DiNapoli says the annual contribution cap will be increased to $15,000 in January. Before introducing DiNapoli, Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro spoke about the Think Differently initiative he launched, prompted by his now 13-year-old daughter, who is on the autism spectrum and lives with a seizure disorder.
And that what Think Differently has become over the course of the last 4 years since our launch is a real call to action to say to businesses and community organizations, not only in Dutchess but across the state, that we have to do more to break down the barriers and help individuals overcome obstacles that too often have those that are living with special needs feel as if, those living with developmental disabilities, feel as if they're sort of outside of the community looking in.
DiNapoli says the New York ABLE program fits well with Molinaro's Think Differently initiative. With the House and Senate having passed their versions of a tax overhaul plan and now having to come together to reconcile differences, DiNapoli says there is a provision in one of the plans that could affect the New York ABLE program, but not negatively.
We'll have to see when the reconciliation happens, whether or not there's anything in there that affects the ABLE programs. Given that it's a new program, a very popular program across the country, more states are buying into it, I'm not anticipating anything negative, but who knows?
Including New York, 30 states offer the ABLE program. Chris McEwen is executive director of the Ark of Dutchess.
We have a gentleman here today who receives services from us, and he has lots of questions about how to. And right now he's talking with his service coordinator, and he's going to talk with another support staff that comes in later. So he has questions about how to do it. So for us, that means we need to get educated on the process so we can help support people who want to enroll and sign up and be a resource for families.
Jamie Griffin is that gentleman's Medicaid service coordinator at the Ark of Dutchess.
I think it's a good way to, you know, save money and easy access to your money too, which would be good. And it's kind of more, you know, depending on the, you know, with the individual, I like how it's more based upon the individual and what they want, because a lot of times they feel like they don't have a say in what they want to do.
To be eligible, an individual must have a disability that was present before age 26. There's more information about the program at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
As you travel along the New York State Thruway, a common sight for years was the Beech Nut Factory in Canajoharie, New York. To that end, residents gathered recently to brainstorm ideas about possible reuse of the former Beech Nut Factory site. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there and filed this report.
The Canajoharie Village Firehouse was packed with local residents eager to share their ideas for the future of the factory complex that anchored the community for more than a century. Baby food manufacturer Beech Nut was founded in Canajoharie but closed the plant and moved to the nearby town of Florida in 2011. The 22-acre property was then sold but was stripped. Local taxes went unpaid for years. It remains dilapidated and partially demolished. Recently, Montgomery County was able to foreclose on the property and begin steps toward reuse. The meeting follows the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency granting approval to the county to remove asbestos contamination from the property. Village Mayor Francis Avery called the approval in early November a good omen.
Once, even if just the eastern site is cleaned up, now you have a clean, developable site that the business community would be quite interested in.
A consulting firm gathered ideas from residents on behalf of EPA. The crowd was split into three separate groups, and people were asked questions, like what would they like to see on the property? What are challenges in the community? What are the strengths? Andrew Santillo is a spokesperson for Montgomery County.
This is an opportunity to hear really what the community sees as what's missing, or what, you know, what would help, you know, complement the downtown of Canajoharie, which is a beautiful downtown to begin with, and we're hoping that we can only, you know, boost the downtown and really, you know, make it even more welcoming or more inviting to people who might be passing by.
Canajoharie is located in the Mohawk Valley, halfway between Utica and Albany on the New York State Thruway. In recent years, notably in 2006, the village has been impacted by severe flooding. Many residents have worked to rally the community before. Ginny Ogden, a reverend at a local church, was part of one group. She said when she moved to Canajoharie with her husband years ago, it felt like home.
You know, and they talk to you like you know everybody, like where you know where the streets are. It's just, it's that feel. It's small town America.
Ogden was also part of a community action group formed a couple years ago to plan next steps for the factory property.
Diversity. We definitely wanted something where there was a banquet hall with a commercial kitchen, where we could have weddings, we could have community gatherings, we could a multi-purpose room.
Trevor Summerfield, who grew up in Canajoharie but moved away after he graduated from high school in 2002, came back last month. He said he enjoys the local outdoor recreation opportunities and small businesses.
I really hope this Beech Nut site here we can really capitalize on and also take advantage of the opportunity it will give our community to reinvest in infrastructure.
All the options were on the table Wednesday night. Some want to see the site leveled to start fresh. Others want to see if there are parts of the remaining structures worth keeping. There was also talk of Massmocha's success in North Adams, where a thriving arts community has grown out of the shuttered Sprague factory over the last 20 years. Others questioned brainstorming at all when there was no way to pay for any projects right now. The county has received around $800,000 in grant funding to prepare the site for redevelopment.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Empire State Winter Games begin February 1st. 3 days earlier, a torch run will begin in Manhattan. That's just one of the changes organizers outlined this week in Lake Placid, which will host the competition. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there.
Organizers expect 2,500 athletes and more than 5,000 family members to attend the 38th Empire State Winter Games in February. Games Executive Director Tate Wardlaw says this year, the sports aren't changing.
For 2018, the sporting events are evolutionary. In other words, there are no completely new sports, but what participants will see this year is that all of the courses are a little bit better. And so what they'll see is an evolution of the quality of the sporting experience.
Organizers are hoping to attract visitors other than the athletes involved in the games. During the formal announcement, Wardlaw explained that they want to create a greater festival atmosphere and bring an Olympic level of pageantry to the games.
We've committed to building a massive festival village right at the bottom of this hill that will include things like the zip line and speed tubing and other fun activities that will literally start from up this hill and go down over massive snow features and end up in that village. We'll conduct a first ever torch relay from Manhattan up the 335 miles to Lake Placid for the 3.5 days prior to the opening ceremony of the games. We're also enhancing the opening ceremony for this year.
The games stopped being funded by the state of New York in 2010. It became a cooperative effort that is now primarily funded by private companies. Regional Office of Sustainable Tourism CEO Jim McKenna says this year marks the games' third transition.
First, it was run by New York State Parks and Recs. Then Governor Patterson decided to eliminate the Empire State Games. The region came together to move it forward, and it was being run and operated by a nonprofit at that time. This year, we're making a significant change, and an events work is taking over the program. That's the vehicle it needs to get it to the next level. But the goal here is to not only add to the economic vitality, but add to something that can continue to grow.
Empire State Development I Love New York Vice President Ross Levi said events like the Empire State Winter Games are vital for tourism, the state's fourth largest industry.
So the Empire State Winter Games we're associated with because we're excited about the potential it has to bring more attention to this amazing region and all the great things there are to see and do. So even though people are coming here in the winter, we know that when they see this great area, they're going to think about coming back for the summer. We know it's going to be successful in bringing attention to this great region.
The 2018 Games feature 30 individual events within 19 sports disciplines. There are also 5 adaptive sports categories.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1749. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.